And our sportscaster tonight is from the Manawatū, and it's Peter Lamb. Kia ora, Peter.
Hello, Karen. How are you?
Welcome back to Nights.
Thank you. It's been many, many months.
Not
that I've fallen off the radar.
Yeah, not that I've spoken to you. So, as you may be aware, it's not exactly my specialist subject. I wouldn't get on Mastermind with sport, but you would.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I've got a terrible memory.
do you?
But I must admit that when through the lockdown, when there wasn't any sport, I sort of was fine. I was able to read a few books and do other things and walk around the block. But when sport starts again, suddenly you can't remember players' names or Christian names and all that sort of stuff.
You've got a lot to remember. Yes.
Yeah, there is, but...
Sorry to interrupt you there. What books did you read? Were there any sporting books?
No, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I don't think there were any, no. Like I said, I got into a non-sporting sort of phase of my life, but it's not unfortunately, but it's back again now anyway.
And the netball got underway pretty...
Does that count?
You wrote a book?
Yeah, I wrote the History of the Manawatū Golf Club, or the last 25 years of the 125th. So that was finished just before lockdown. It got stuck halfway on the printer's press in Masterton, I think, during the COVID, and it saw the light of day after everything came right. So that's now for sale, and we're just hanging out for people to buy it. 300 pages, took me 4 years.
That absolutely does count. What's it called, Peter?
I came up with the title Forever in Bounds, which actually gave me a bit of a scare because the reason that it's called that is that the Manawatū Golf Club, which is the premier sort of club in the district and hosts a whole lot of big tournaments, it's always boasted that it's the oldest club on its original site. And also, it used to have one hole that was open to the Manawatū River. So when the Manawatū River flooded, it's had some big ones since 1880, it was part of the course went underwater, or one hole did. So that was plugged. So that was meant that it was safe from the rampant waters. And then a new subdivision was or is being built on one part of the course where the Hokapuru campus of Massey University was. And that suddenly was a threat to the club as well, because if you get new residents in, adjacent to a course who suddenly don't like golf or don't like golf balls flying into their porridge and their breakfast, you could have legal problems. So they had a lot of that went to a planning hearing, and all that was fine, that was sorted. So then I thought, I wonder if anyone's ever tested to see whether this is the oldest club in New Zealand. And this was near the end, and it only took up two pages, but it took a mammoth amount of time. Fortunately, I had what the old guys didn't have, was the internet. So a lot of the clubs on their websites have their histories. Not all of them did. So I had to ascertain that Manawatū was indeed the oldest club on its original site. And I got a fright with a couple of them. In places like Thames and West Coast and things where the golf clubs have been around forever, I would come across some that were older. But fortunately, none of them were on the original site that I could see, or if they were, they weren't as old as Manawatū. So in the end, I was able to ascertain that it was pretty much correct. The Otago Golf Club is older, but it's been on a few sites, so it doesn't really count. So that was that bit of drama.
Fantastic. Gee, that's a lot of pages to write about one golf club. There must have been some great stories.
I did about 70 interviews because I enjoy doing that with personalities, and a lot of biographies, especially on one president, John Bills, who after the war, and he was born in London, so he was sent away from his parents in New Zealand and ended up sort of as child labour on a farm in Ekitahuna. Never thought he would have anything to do with the club as august as Manawatū. Ended up being president for 5 years and still works every day at the club. So that was an example of one of many that we delved into, people's backgrounds and things like that. So hopefully people enjoy it. So I don't know what my next project is, but I need to take a breather.
I'm just trying to think about some of what they used to call they probably still do, the swipe and swear and the hit and giggle.
Oh, for
golfing terms.
Back in the day, the Manawatū Golf Club sort of thing was more of a men's men's drinking club, really.
19th hole.
Yeah, and the women maybe would be downstairs imploring the men to come home, but wouldn't be allowed upstairs. Things have changed a lot since then. It's much more egalitarian now, and all sorts of people play golf. I know when I was young, didn't know anyone who played the game. It was certainly, you had to be a professional, a doctor or a dentist or something normally to play golf.
Of course, in the cities, like Auckland, for example, they're wanting to encroach on the golf courses and use them to build houses on. Not quite the same in the Manawatu.
No, not really. No, they're pretty much entrenched there. But it's a shame in Auckland. I know most of the clubs. And you need your green space as well. And they don't really have, per capita, there are not many clubs in Auckland, really. So it's a bit more expensive than what it is down in the provinces, where often you get the best players, probably New Zealand teams, tend to come from the Southlands. And this club, the Manawatu Club, has had three concurrent PGA Tour professionals in the United States. Well, hardly any clubs in the world have had that. So it is funny where a lot of the people come from, and there's probably more opportunities to play out in the provincial areas.
Absolutely. And did you find out who's had the best round at the club?
I did a chapter on course records. The problem with course records is if part of the course is altered over time, it makes the other records invalid. But there's one or two people there who consistently go low. But it's an interesting thing, course records.
And holes in one?
No, I didn't broach that because there's been a lot of them, and they're all recorded on a honours board in the clubhouse, so I didn't need to go there. We did find a life member, though, from way back in the late 1800s, maybe, who was not on the honours board, because way back then, of course, you couldn't possibly have a woman as a life member of such a club. At least that's my thinking. She was made an associate life member, and one of the surviving life members who helped me a little bit discovered it in an old minute. So we found out the name was Catherine Wilson and put that to the club committee as to what they wanted to do. And being in enlightened times, they instantly reinstated her as a full life member. And there was another guy from Napier who wasn't even a member of the club, but who was a great friend of the club. And he was found to be a life member as well. And so I went up to Napier to check on this guy. His name is Kennedy, which is a pretty august sort of name in Hawke's Bay. And I couldn't find anything at the Napier Golf Club. And even their records are very slim in the history book. But I did discover that the club records were in a solicitor's office in Napier during the 1931 earthquake. And the building next door, I think the post office, went up in flames and also burnt the solicitor's office containing the records. So that was sort of interesting as well.
Yeah, what a great research job. Well, congratulations on getting that book out during lockdown. And yeah, about other sports as well, I started off just talking about the netball there because that was one of the first sports in the world to get back on the court, wasn't it?
It was. I've got to admit, I haven't watched a lot of that yet. I'm very remiss for a male bloke.
You're too busy shaking your fist at the Super Rugby, I believe.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of whistle in netball, which we've got used to, but it's starting to be like that in rugby as well. And they've brought in all these, they've brought in the new variations on the laws at the breakdown, which you probably find a bit boring, Karen, but they've now got an abbreviated Super Rugby, the Super Rugby Aotearoa. It's only about 10 rounds or something, and they've brought in the rules, and they're quite right in what they've done, but I just wonder whether they should have done it now when it's only sort of half a competition. And the whistle's just going the whole time. And penalties, it happened yesterday in the Hurricanes-Chiefs game at Hamilton. There were more than 30, I think it was, and it's just an awful spectacle. I don't necessarily blame the referees, but I maybe blame the people who told them to enforce this stuff. It's all about players going off their feet at rucks, which they shouldn't do and should never have done, but have done for years. Players offside, players going from the side, again, which they shouldn't do. But I think you do this thing at the start of a year, and they give a full penalty in rugby and in league now is very harsh. You can peel off 60 metres with a kick from a penalty, and then you get the blooming line-out throw. And there was a guy red-carded yesterday, scrapped in the lock from the Hurricanes. He was yellow-carded initially for a very slight misdemeanour in a line-out, which was a penalty at worst. And then he was later yellow-carded legitimately, stopping a try, and he should have been further back. But the accumulation of that is two yellow cards to the red, so he was gone. So I think it's tough. The referees go to their pockets much too frequently. I'm seeing it in club rugby as well.
What would be a solution to that in the Super Rugby, though, if they're the new rules?
Yeah, they're new variations. They just haven't been imposed for years. And it's been one of my hobby horses that they should have done. I would say maybe give free kicks for this. They could have done that for the 10 rounds while people are getting used to it. Because players have done it. Some of them have gone off their feet for their whole careers. So now they're having to adjust. So you're getting teams on full-blooded attack. And someone goes off his feet, and it's a penalty to the defending team. So then if you've got Geordie Barrett or someone with a massive boot, he can peel off huge territory. And suddenly you're, from being on attack, you're in full-blooded defence.
And what are the players themselves saying about it, Peter?
No, I haven't been in touch with any of them at that level. But I'm just speaking really from a spectator, where you like to see the game flow. And I mean, they're getting big crowds and everything. So there's not an easy solution, though, Karen, to this.
No, it's going to carry on, isn't it? So there'll be a lot of whistleblowing, as it were.
Yeah, well, the players do have to adjust, and they've got to stay on their feet, but. During the lockdown, I saw some of the old games, and everyone was on their feet back then. But now, even if you don't go off your feet, you're knocked off your feet, and you can be pinged for that too.
And closer to home, you've written an article on the Manawatū Turbo's dream team remains speculation for now.
Yeah, that's because no one knows where the players are going to be come the NPC or the Moto 10 Cup, as it is, starting in September. If the Japan borders open, which is possible because they haven't had too much of the coronavirus, a lot of the players will then shoot off to either fulfil contracts in Japan or take them up in Japan. If they don't open, then it could be a bonus for the NPC. And I think what people are hankering for is to see All Blacks and leading players playing for their provinces in afternoon rugby, which there will be quite a bit of. So in Manawatu's sake, for instance, there's a guy called Aaron Smith who happens to be the All Black halfback. And he was keen to play for his club. He was keen to play for his club, feeling yellows, at the start of the rugby season before that was kiboshed with the COVID. And they can also call on Nani Lamapi, Jackson Hemipo, quite a few other players, Jamie Booth, the halfback, a lot of super players. And I think that would be great if that could happen. Whether it would happen, I don't know. Hopefully the All Blacks don't go and play this crazy game that's being touted against the Kangaroos, the rugby league team, which would demean the jerseys of both codes, I believe.
Tell me more about that. What's that?
Well, I think there's been talks between the New Zealand Rugby Union and the Australian Rugby League that both of them clearly need money. And they've touted a festival game, a clash of the codes between the two. And the two codes are not alike in almost any area these days. I mean, rugby league has scrums where you get penalised if you push. Rugby is the other way. Then there's lineouts where you're lifting people. It would just be nonsense.
How have they proposed that might work?
Well, I think they'll just make it up.
They're
desperate for money. I think if you're that desperate for money, and you're able to play each other, in other words, the Australian borders open, then play a blooming rugby test match against Dave Rennie's Wallabies. That would be good.
Make more sense.
Oh, I think the other idea is nuts, and I don't think it would go down well with the New Zealand rugby fans and probably with the Australian rugby league fans either.
Now let's get on to football. And how significant is the decision to host the FIFA Women's World Cup in New Zealand and Australia 2023?
Oh, I think that'll be terrific, won't it, I think?
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, I think that's quite a coup because, I mean, neither New Zealand nor Australia are foremost football or soccer countries. So to pull that off, I think they were up against Zambia, weren't they? So you probably know more of what you're going to get in New Zealand than you might do in Colombia. No, I think that would be good because that, I mean, women's football is strong, especially even in the United States, it's probably the foremost women's sport. And it probably would be close to being that here as well, although women's rugby is on the ascendancy.
Where would they play these matches? Where are the good grounds around the country?
Can't say I've studied that, but I think those venues would be in the main centres. And remember, it's being shared with Australia, so they will probably get the big ones.
Oh, yeah.
Usually, in such tournaments, they usually have a semi-final in each country, and the final would be in the big country with Australia.
What a shame. Not here.
No, well, it would make sense to go to where you get the biggest audience, wouldn't it, I would think.
Yeah, true. But these days, it's all televised. I guess they're still tussling with that.
Yeah.
Or have they made decisions?
I hadn't boned up on that. I would think that it would be pretty much set because I think FIFA would have demanded that when they were making their presentation.
And just going back to the rugby, club rugby, how has that bounced back since lockdown? You know, are the teams back on the fields?
Yeah, they are. In Manawatu, where I am, and I usually go to one game a week. There's been three rounds. They've started a week or two earlier than some of the neighbouring unions. But I'm not sure that it's bounced back as well as they might have hoped. In Manawatu, for instance, there's Feeling Yellows and Massey University look like the two top teams as they were last year, possibly with Old Boys Marist making me eat my words there. But some of the other teams are probably not as strong. I wonder whether some of the guys' fitness has fallen away. But certainly the crowds at games are quite good. The first one I went to, I can usually park within a certain reach of the ground, but I was miles away. So people were pretty desperate to see a bit of live sport, even at club level, which is good.
Yes, I think you've got a big point about the fitness levels, although plenty of people were still training in their backyards or going out for runs and doing everything by themselves, weren't they?
They were, but then they were about, in a matter of two, they were about to set off in the first game, and then it was out for a couple of months. And so you lose your training fitness and your match fitness, and even running around roads and things is not, in rugby, is not the same. You've got to have contact and all of that other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a guy who was obviously a very good footballer. He was just kicking a ball himself, you know, across the field, going and getting it, kicking it back as they do, but it just went on for hours. So he was obviously committed. But he was on his own.
Yeah, well, it's important, especially for those guys who get boot to ball. But I do notice there's a few rotund guys around playing senior rugby now that there didn't used to be.
So, yeah, I don't know if you're allowed to use that word these days, rotund, are you?
Oh, probably not. I'll be in the gun again.
I'm joking.
They might well have been frequenting the hamburger palaces when the lockdown eased up a bit. I'm not sure. But anyway, times are changing. And yeah, the rugby is it's a brutal sport now, Karen, as well. So it's not going to appeal to everyone, especially in terms of injuries and you've got jobs to uphold.
Are you saying that tongue-in-cheek or you mean it?
No, I think that's serious. It's way more brutal than when I played.
Is it?
Yeah, you've got bigger bodies for a start coming at you.
Yeah, true.
You know, back in the day, some of us were 70 and 80 kilos playing, and maybe in the forwards as well. I mean, now you've got 100-kilo backs coming at you.
Ooh.
I mean, you're frightening the whips out of me, I would say.
You'd be running in the opposite direction.
Yeah,
get out of their way.
Hold the dive into.
Very good. Oh, well, great to talk to you, Peter, and taught me a bit.
Anyway.
Yeah, and congratulations on your book. And where is it able to be purchased if anyone wants to?
At the moment, it's from the Manawatu Golf Club. So make sure you order a copy. Get it for Brian Crump or something.
That's the way. Good on. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Karen. Bye.
Very good. That's Peter Lamp giving us an update on sport there.